watching Feminine Wealth TV, the show that uncovers the diamond tips on creating truly conscious wealth from change makers, world shakers, and wealth creators. Today, I'm joined on the show by Fiona Cosgrove of Wellness Coaching Australia. And Fiona, she truly is another change maker that has joined this show. So Fiona has 25 years experience in health, fitness, and the wellness industries, from owning and managing health clubs all over Australia and Asia, health clubs like the Golden Door Group of Health Retreats. She's also lectured on corporate health management in universities and is creating a new model for change in the wellness industry with her newest business, Wellness Coaching Australia. Fiona is passionate about helping people and organisations be the best they can be by recognising that optimal mental health, physical and emotional wellness are essential for growth of the individual and within the corporate culture. Fiona, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So look, as always, I like to start the show with how I met my guests and the reasons for having them on the show. So Fiona and I met last year, I think it was about a year ago now that we met. We met last year, both speaking at an event here in Sydney. And I think we probably hit it off because both of us being from Northern Hemisphere and living in the sunnier Southern Hemisphere of Australia, we probably initially had that connection. So Fiona and I were having a really good conversation at the event last year about the connection between wellness and wealth and actually having, you know, financial consciousness and the impact that has on the world and on our own health. So I thought it would be really interesting to delve into just how much our finances and feelings about money affect our wellness, and similarly, how much our health and wellness affects our ability to actually make money and do well in the wealth space. So Fiona, to kick things off, I just wanted to really start with, you know, this concept of wellness. What is it really?
It's a big word.
It is a big word. I think people get frightened by this big word.
You see it everywhere. They say actually wellness is a trillion-dollar industry these days.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And yet it's a really difficult one to define, or at least I think to get the general impression to the public that what are we talking about? Obviously it's something good.
Yes.
Something we all want.
Yes.
To me, I had to have a definition because people ask me, what do you do? What do you mean? What's wellness coaching? So coaching is one thing and wellness is something else. And wellness to me is best described, I suppose, as optimal mental and physical health.
Right.
And I could even take that further because I had to go to the dictionary to define optimal because the question came up, is it the best someone can possibly be according to the guidelines and the books? You know, like how fit can you be? How thin should you be, etc.? Whereas if you really look at it, optimal is a subjective description. So it's about being the best you choose to be.
Oh, I like that. The best you choose to be. So finally we can sort of let go of all these shoulds that we have hanging around.
And I guess with wealth, maybe that's the same thing. It's down to there'll probably be a lot of people out there who feel that to have more money is better than, you know, the more you can get, the more you...
Or how much should you have before you're wealthy.
Yeah.
So I think it's very, very similar.
I think they're quite similar concepts and it's an interesting combination, I think, that you brought together today. So I'm happy to bridge out that.
Do you think the reason people struggle so much with kind of getting well or being at optimal wellness is because there are so many facets involved in wellness? You know, there's your fitness, there's your mental health, your emotional health, and obviously I'm bringing in financial health. But what are the other areas that you touch on in your coaching?
Yeah, again, it's a really big topic because I come from a health background, and fitness background, and I used to think it was all about having, you know, the best physical fitness you can have and hopefully a decent body composition and feeling good about yourself. Whereas if you start looking at mental health and you start reading the literature and the research from people like Dr. Martin Seligman, his definition of, it used to be happiness, but it's interesting that he now calls it well-being.
His
five things.
He's moving with the trend.
Exactly, yes. I think so. And nutrition's been brought into it, but it used to be, he's described recently as positive emotions, engagement in life, positive relationships, meaning and achievement. And when I use those five things, I always add another P, so I call it PERMAP, and add physical health.
Of course, because it is important in well-being. Why did they leave physical health out?
Well, I think it was all about from here up, so it was all about mental health, whereas the fitness industry and the health industries are all about physical health, and yet to me they're completely intertwined. And your introduction today I found again really interesting because often people think that someone who works in the wellness industry, the last thing on their mind is building wealth or even acknowledging that wealth has importance, because in the definition I just gave you there was nothing about the dollar sign.
Yeah.
It was achievement.
Yeah.
And that probably is the clue, I think, to where really money might fit in.
So Fiona, like your whole career really from the beginning has been about health and fitness and wellness, this journey that you've been on. Can you tell us, where did it all begin?
Yeah. Where did it all begin? I don't know which part of my life I was in, which career I was in when I started with health and fitness. I suppose I'd always had a passion for it. If you tend to have any ability at sports, you become interested in your physical identity. Mm-hmm. So I think part of when you grow up and if you play sports well, that's part of how you get your self-esteem.
And then you gravitate to what you're good at as well as you think.
It took a few turns in other directions, but finally I realised that I was interested in working in that area. And without boring you about all the different jobs that took me there, I ended up in the fitness industry. And really, really feeling that I was aligned with, the things that I cared about, which was you feel good when you're fit. Mm. And again, in my 20s, I was very much around, go after the next goal, the next physical goal, whether it's running a marathon or whatever. Mm. And wanting everybody to do the same. And, of course, now at an older age, I realise that that probably was useful for about 10% of the people we were dealing with, our clientele. Yeah. But it's what the fitness industry... It's changing, but it was about in those days.
It's all about the body.
The body, yeah, growing lighter and having a good time and a lot of things that probably gave a bit of a bad name back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But, I where it all began. So from there, it sort of evolved and I went from being an educator. I usually say if I brought my two parts of my life together, I went from fitness to wellness and from expert to coach.
Right, okay.
But to do those things, have been a lot of, business decisions made and... Mm. I hadn't been able to do any of those things. I wouldn't have been able to do any of those things if the money side of things wasn't considered.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's what I think a lot of business owners forget, is that it is a really important part of your journey. It comes on the journey with you, really, is the money issue.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, over your career, were there ever times, and I'm sure there has been, because you're human and we're all human, when you let your own wellness... falter, stress, overwhelm, etc. Yeah. I mean, what were those times in your life?
I suppose, again, now having a better understanding of what wellness is or what it means to me, not so much what it is, what it means to me, I probably had times in my life where I thought I was on fire. I was striving for whatever it happened to be at the time. So whether it was studying and I was getting into a degree or a distinction or whatever you kind of go for when you're a little bit of a high achiever. Potentially, possibly some of those goals might have been other people's goals that I thought it was important.
More shoulds.
I should do this because it's expected of me, and therefore so-and-so will think, whether it's mother, father, or whoever, will think that I've achieved things. So I look back at one time probably a few times, where I had young children, I was studying a degree, I think I was lecturing, and I was running a business.
You were basically being superwoman.
Absolutely.
How many of us are doing that?
We're all doing that. I look back, I don't think I even knew my name in those days. So I was breastfeeding in the middle of it too at one stage. But I let go of the sense of how I was feeling. And I think for a few years there, I actually really kind of, not totally lost touch, but I was on such a treadmill to get to the next
goal.
I didn't really stop and go, happy.
Mm. Actually, interestingly, goal setting obviously is something that a lot of coaches would talk about.
Yeah.
The power of goal setting, the importance of goal setting. But do you think that sometimes we can get lost in that, and that goal setting can become something like a job in itself that actually can make you unhappy and not happy?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're talking wellness coaching as goals as being the steps along the way to arrive at the place that we describe as being your vision of improved wellness. So goals are more about targets, they're steps, they're action steps. So if you achieve that goal rather than the big goal, I think a lot of people think that when they get whatever it is they want, that if-when mentality,
that then
I'll stop then, I'll be happy then.
Yeah.
And it's the old cliche of it's not the destination, but it's the journey that usually gives us the most satisfaction.
Yeah.
So we prefer to think of goals as being very necessary steps along the way to usually creating new habits, which is really what behaviour change and wellness is all about.
And getting you to where you actually... But do you think people struggle with... Because I think one of the things that I always say is that with money, and obviously that's my topic, is that money really is just a tool to be used by you.
Yeah.
It's at your service there to help you go wherever it is that you want to go.
Yeah.
But I think most people struggle with the where is it that I want to go,
yeah,
and where
yeah.
is it that I should go versus yeah. what I want. And I don't think people understand the difference between those two things. Is
yeah.
that something you find in your...
I think definitely. I think there's a really good parallel there, that money to me is a means to an end.
Mm.
But there really isn't an end, because we're in it for life, you know. We're not going to just
yeah.
get there and get the Ferrari or whatever it is. Whereas I don't think there's anything wrong with having an end goal that might be represented by something that money can buy.
Mm.
I think it's down to really what does that represent. Is it about, well, let's use Ferrari just as an example,
yeah,
because it's
a good example
thing. Yeah. I mean, it represents a certain degree of status, okay?
Yeah.
It also represents a certain degree of look what I've done. It also could represent, I love cars and I just want to sit in a Ferrari and own a Ferrari and drive a Ferrari.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that any of those are wrong and any of those are right, but I think it's very, very individual.
Yeah.
And I mean, we could really sort of tie ourselves in knots over this whole topic of, you know, what does money actually do for them? I look at it and say, a lack of money is a
yeah.
problem. I think really at base
yeah.
level, if you haven't got it, you really can't go after life. But I don't think having money
necessarily gives you
happiness,
what you want.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I mean, speaking of having no money, right?
Mm.
You know, I mean, I remember being in a few years back, you know, being in a state of financial strain myself.
Yeah.
I think we've all been there. You know, we've all had times when we've done things that probably led us to financial strain.
Mm.
And you know, I'm someone who's very interested in the wellness industry. I
yeah.
eat really well, I exercise, I get all that. I'm big into personal development and all that stuff. But I have to say, getting my financial life in order did more for me than any yoga practice or
yeah.
green juice ever could have at that mm-hmm. time. And actually just getting my act together and just solving some of the debt problems I had and some of the bad
yeah.
financial management practices that I had. And actually just it lifted my energy.
Yeah.
And I suppose now this is why I feel quite passionately that
yeah.
that financial education or financial responsibility is actually a factor in wellness as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you entirely. And I think, you know, it's again, it's that flip side of it. It's not so much that having money gives you energy, because really when you said to me what's wellness about,
mm.
the currency of wellness to me is energy.
Yeah.
But at the end
yeah.
of the day,
that's what everybody wants
yeah.
really, isn't
well,
it?
We all want more
energy.
Vitality,
yeah.
all
yeah.
that stuff, all of losing weight and all those things are fine. They're just ways of getting more energy.
Mm.
But I think financial strain and financial burden is an energy drain. So
yeah.
it's not so much that you'll get energy from having more money, it's
yeah.
just that if you are under that strain or you're not in control and you don't know where you're going, you don't know what's going to happen next,
mm.
it can deplete, I think, the goodness of your life or the happiness in your life.
Yeah.
So I feel I'm with you, and I think it's absolutely essential for everyone to have a degree of control, because one of the biggest drivers in life is to have control.
Yeah.
And if we don't know what's going on with our financial situation, we haven't got control of that area.
We don't have control
yeah,
of that. I mean, not that to say that you can never really have full control of your life. I mean, there's, you know,
no.
there's you know, this flow and you've got to
yeah.
let go of some things.
Yeah.
But I think in your financial life, it's certainly a strain that you can take away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I suppose education would be a bit like what you're doing in wellness. I mean, do you think education is the key in some of these things to...
Do you mean specifically with regard to...
Well, I suppose when you think about
wellness,
like when you
yeah.
when you're coaching clients,
yeah.
is it when they get a bit more in the know about what they need to be doing in order to
yeah.
feel better?
Yeah,
it's the power of coaching, I guess,
yeah.
and mentoring.
It's funny because there is one side of it where people are thirsty for knowledge, and that's the way, again, when I say the fitness industry, health and fitness, and the government, and everyone is all about,
yeah.
if we just tell people the answer, they'll be fine. The reality is people don't, because they actually want to come up with the answer themselves, and that's what coaching is about.
Yes.
Because we are autonomous, self-determining creatures who like
mm.
our own ideas better than other people's.
Mm.
So in terms of, you know, do people just need to know, is that more empowering? I think it is empowering education. But the kind of real empowerment that people get is when the light bulb goes on in their head,
mm.
usually around self-awareness,
mm.
which I think is more significant often than, oh my goodness, that's, I have to do it because she did it, he did it, they told
oh,
me.
Yeah, yeah, it's that, it is that
self-knowledge
thing,
and
that
self-awareness, yeah.
And self-awareness, yeah. I mean, you know, with your own, I mean, you've run mega businesses, you know, you've made a lot of money in your time, you know, you've been very, very successful. I know that you've also lost money in your time, as you know, like that's
yeah.
the nature of business. Do you feel that throughout running, you know, at the height of things in your businesses, that if you had had more guidance or mentoring on the financial end of things, do you think it would have been less stressful?
I think,
or how do you feel about that?
I think it would have been. It's very individual, isn't it? I think that if I didn't have some knowledge, which I did have,
yeah,
it could have been absolutely terrifying. Mm. So I kind of knew enough to stay above the real stress line.
Yeah.
But I could imagine if you didn't have that, it could be really, really, you know, not good for you at all. And yet I look back now and think what I knew later would have helped me enormously in the early days. I think it's funny, everyone's relationship with money is very different, isn't it?
Yes.
I think that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, because people feel differently about it. And some people are ostrich head in the sand and just don't want to look at it, which is it's so unhealthy in its own right. And then other people are just gung-ho after that and that alone, which is also just as unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that you have a good relationship with money if that's all you're after, because really, you know, the pursuit of money with no greater purpose is sort of the journey into the vortex of emptiness, which was something I came up with the other day. I mean, the other thing I wanted to touch on, you know, often we talked about financial strain, but often having a lot of money and having, you know, being wealthy, but having a lot of big decisions to make that you don't feel confident making.
Yeah.
You know, how stressful do you think that is? You've been in that situation. If you want to share some
there's so much research.
You've been in a lot of those situations.
Yeah, and lots of research written on that for people who win the lotto. A lot of it is to do with whether or not you feel you deserve the money. So if you suddenly get a windfall, and people, you win that all the time. If you actually don't believe you deserve that,
you'll get rid of it.
You'll get rid of it very quickly. And you can make yourself.
It's like divorces as well. The same thing happens in divorces. Yeah.
So if you suddenly make money, I know in my case, we had a couple of really... I look back at my career and go, I think I did a lot of good work and I've made some good choices and decisions, but I've been very lucky too.
It's always with luck involved.
Yeah.
You've got to be grateful for that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think about selling businesses, I didn't start businesses up with my partner then and then on my own to sell them. And I'll look back and go, well, why not?
Why not? Yeah.
Well, a lot of people say that.
Well, a lot of people, as we were talking off camera earlier, you were saying a lot of people, particularly women, are building jobs and not actual businesses.
Something to do because it's not, you know, because they're, and often if it's a business we're passionate about, we're so involved in it that we can't separate ourselves from it.
And we never see it as an asset that could be sold one day.
That's right, yeah.
But as you know, we were talking about, things can change, you know, so life can throw different things at you when you may need to sell a company one day.
Yeah, so if you do, getting back to that idea of, I think about the experience of selling the first business, I think, again, you can, and whether it's a male or female thing, I don't know. For me, it was great. We sold a business, we had more money than we ever imagined we would. I kind of went, yeah, great, put it over there, now let's go on with life. Let's go and do fun things that money can buy and have a bit of time now. Whereas my partner at the time, and again, it was very identified with the business and the job and his purpose in life, whereas I had two young kids. That was all.
So his sense of identity was taken away. Just even though he had a lot of money, he had sold the business, which was selling.
And he said himself that he really kind of struggled with that. So it's very quickly we went back into another business. So I think there is a difference in male and women, and it depends on the nature of the business.
Yeah.
So that was the first experience, and then I think the second one, when again was not certainly didn't set out to take the business over on my own with the view of increasing my wealth or doubling or trebling, whatever it was. And it just happened to be the right time and the right place. I'm glad I had the knowledge to know that always take a sale. If a good sale comes along,
never
go, hang on, this is my baby, this is my club, this is, you can't have it. Because what could have happened in that case if I hadn't gone through the tremendously stressful time of due diligence and selling it and renegotiating a lease and everything, about 2 years later, GFC hit. I wouldn't have a business to sell.
Yeah,
you would just would not have a business to sell. It would have just, you know.
Speaking of that, you know, it's a very emotional decision if somebody comes to you and wants to buy your business.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to somebody who's facing that or maybe might face that in the future about how to keep your wellness intact?
Yeah.
When you're dealing with a large financial decision like that may overwhelm you.
I think so much of this comes back to what I really believe in, the wellness coaching model that we use, which is really not necessarily, as I say, helping people get fitter, thinner, whatever.
Yeah.
It's about living a good life, living a life that's got life satisfaction. A lot of that comes from
fulfillment.
So if, when you write we call it a vision statement, the way you'd like things to really kind of develop, not necessarily the thing that you haven't got, the holy grail, but this is the way I'd like my life to be, and it might be mainly like that, but you might like to make improvements in certain areas, so you might talk about what you want more of. I think it becomes fairly clear as to what's most important for you. And again, it's almost like this money is a means to an end. So if someone said, well, am I going to take the money and run? Mm. Or am I going to stay in a business that I love and I have so much meaning? Which again, there's
that is a consideration.
So then I guess what you have to look at then is what will the money enable me to do and what risk do I take by not... part of life, isn't it? It's currency of life, energy and money and currencies of life.
Yeah,
and if you really need to do something passionately, well, then you've got to ask yourself the question, can I do that again in another way?
Yeah, because that is my vision. And the vision that you've been on for so long has been this business or this idea or this giving back, and now somebody comes wanting to buy it.
Yeah.
And while the check might look great, what's the money without the vision? Or without
the next challenge?
What's
your next challenge? What's your next challenge?
Yeah.
So we encourage people to think like that too. And as you said, it's that flexibility.
Mm.
It's not that this is the way I want my life to look. If something comes out at you at the side, you go, okay, given the new information, what can I do with it?
But yeah,
it's finances.
Yeah, I mean, there's something I've been talking to some of my clients about, is saying that, you know, when you come to making business decisions, I always try and say to them, it's very important what you said about having your own personal vision first.
Yeah.
Because whatever business decision or financial decision you make, it must align with what your personal vision is and not the other way around. Because otherwise you are on the road to unhappiness and lack of clarity.
Yeah.
So I suppose that would be something that's what I try and get people to make decisions based on, that because it's not about the money or the size of the check or whatever it is that you're going to do.
Yeah.
It's about what impact is it going to have on your personal vision.
So we talk about, when we say about the vision, we actually say, so what's the value behind that? Because that's another way of actually putting it into sort of compartments in a way. It's like, well, this is what I want in my life because this is important to me.
Yeah.
It might be freedom. It might be family. It might be helping. It might be, you know, whatever, any one of those things. That everyone's going to have very different values.
And it's getting clearer about actually what those values are, and, you know, what does money, and I ask clients this as well, what does money mean to you personally?
Yeah.
Because I can't actually tell somebody, I can teach people all the tools and strategies and tactics about becoming wealthy, but I can't teach them what view they want when they get to the top of the mountain that they've chosen. You know, that's something that they have to do for themselves.
That's a really good way of putting it.
So, you know, I always say to people, it's really important to start with that, because I can help you get there, but if you get to the wrong place, I can't change it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think also a good way of putting it, especially again in the wellness industry where so many people work, and they often say, I'm the luckiest person in the world because I work in an area. And I think, well, they are if the rest of their life is working okay.
Yeah.
But being the luckiest person in the world and not having enough money to pay the bills or the mortgage.
Exactly.
I don't think it's that lucky.
Yeah.
So,
some of the, I mean, particularly in the wellness industry, I would see this. I have a lot of friends who are yoga teachers and stuff like this. And it's changing a lot now, but, you know, what there used to be the catch cry in the industry is, but I'm not into the money. And I just think, oh, really? I mean, you know, you can't step outside the door because you don't have any money. And money is, unfortunately, you know, the wheel of life. I think they need to add in a financial element because it is a part of your well-being and your life. It does.
And it's a measure of success for yourself. And that's my personal view on me being successful in the businesses I've had and in my current business, which I never set up to be a
money making
or to sell or anything. But I look now, I'm excited by the financial success of that business now because it means that what we're doing is working, and we've now got the capability of getting it out there to more people. So the money for me is not about, I've got this much in the bank or I'm going to be okay and I can live till I'm 95 or whatever we were saying earlier.
Yeah.
It's down to now we matter. Now
you're saying people are willing to pay for the value that you're giving.
Yeah.
And because you're honouring the value exchange, which is your gift serving, and you're honouring the value exchange in terms of money coming back, and that money can then be used to serve and give more value to more people.
Yeah.
So it's that the value exchange is being honoured, and from that you can see that your work is being
very important. Yeah. It's also an indication of the fact that people are interested in what we're doing.
They're
not alone. They need it. They're willing to pay for it. They want it. They're ready for it.
Mm.
Which, you know, 7 years ago people said, what's wellness? What's coaching?
Yeah.
So it represents a lot of different things, but I don't think there's anything wrong with feeling the nice warmth.
Yeah, of knowing that it's
financial stability.
Success.
Yeah. I think I said earlier that, you know, you count and you matter. But in today's world in business, it's important to have a good financial standing.
Yes.
Otherwise, people don't pay attention. And it's not about throwing the money around, but we're doing okay.
What we're doing here matters.
And we've thought about it. You know, we don't just think about the product, we think about the actual structure of the business and the way we create it. It reminds me of the days where, you know, the gym industry was flourishing, again, early 80s, talking now.
Yeah.
There was a gym on every corner, they were selling lifetime memberships, and everybody was like,
all those leg warmers. And
and they went broke 2 weeks later, so they joined the 700 members, and then the doors would close.
What was that?
Was rife. There were many, many chains that did that, and the fitness industry had the dirtiest reputation of any industry, literally in the 80s, and we were fighting against that. So people didn't want to know about it because they said, you take our money, you close your door, and that's what was happening because there wasn't a good business model behind it.
Yeah.
So this is personal pride.
Yeah, this is great because, you know, again, a lot of people I speak to, there's the importance of the business model.
Yeah.
It's not just about, you know, the passion that you have for your message or what it is that you do, but the business model matters. Yeah. It really matters.
I think I was thinking of an analogy when we were talking earlier, that I don't really sit around and count. I'm not going to count the dollars. And I get excited maybe once a month where I look at the bottom line and go, yeah, we did good, that's fine. I don't stress on the detail every day. To me, I think having a good financial stability is a bit like living at home. If my closet was all disorganized and the clothes lying all over.
Yeah, and clothes all over the floor.
Yeah, all
yeah.
in order.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
someone's taking care of the boring stuff that I don't know and telling me what I need to know so I can make the decisions that I'm good at.
Yeah.
But if it's all over the show,
that's when it's stressful, because even when your wardrobe is all over the place, that's quite stressful in your life.
I feel exactly the same way about both those things. Yeah. Some people are really, really happy. Yeah. With their wardrobe or whatever they also
all over the place, true.
All over the place, and they seem to be able to move forward.
Yeah.
But I think, you know,
we must be very like that, because for me, that would just be we must be type A personalities or something. Yeah,
so it is down to, I think, how and then we also have people with money too who have to be absolutely in control of every cent. And
well, that's a problem too. That's
a
relationship with money thing. I'm like, well, you know, I just, you know, we all have different issues. But look, moving on slightly, I wanted to touch on your work in the corporate world. So you also work with corporates on wellness within their company, in the employees. Is that the?
It's certainly becoming. It's going to a rapid growth area. So
yeah.
Corporate wellness or corporate health has been around for a while. And back in the early days, when I was first actually teaching a subject called corporate health management, nobody knew anything about it, and I was trying to find someone who was doing something somewhere.
It would have been considered a bit woo-woo, actually, because having been in the corporate world myself, I can imagine, you know, I mean, only the big companies would be doing corporate wellness.
That's gym.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah,
gym, or you had a subsidized gym membership, and that was it.
Yeah.
Or maybe a stop smoking talk once a year or something like that. But interesting, presenting at conferences occasionally at the Health and Productivity Conference.
Yeah.
It's been slow growth. And again, they've gone through this phase of going, at the end of the day, we just want to know what the dollar value is to put in spending this much money.
Yeah.
And that can be quite difficult.
Because you can't really measure that.
Well, there's three ways of measuring it. What they do is absenteeism, presenteeism, and turnover of staff. And the last one, actually, is only just starting to be noticed, that employers who offer good structured corporate health benefits or programs, it's not just that, but it's actually showing it shows that they care, and they become an employer of choice. So people start gravitating to those companies because of the culture within the company. But in terms of the types of programs that are being offered now, we're seeing a lot of last resort, or what come with the phrases, where there's, say, the mines, or there's industries where people are really either burning out or suffering from, you know, big work cessation claims, rehab, everything, and they're going, we've got to fix these people.
Because there's a shortage of more people coming, so they have a skill shortage.
Unfortunately, people can't work, so it's all about getting them back to work. It's a bit like after the horse has bolted, but at least it's a start. And now they're starting to realise that, say, coaching, in other words, helping people with behaviour change, is a good thing. But again, they're focusing very much on the people who need to fix their lives, whereas in an ideal world, to maybe
get them before.
Preventative measures actually help people make choices in their daily routine, which is very boring because it's all made up of habits, but that support their energy levels, because if they've got better energy levels, they're going to be better employees.
Yeah, because recently we've been reading quite a lot about this whole triple bottom line accounting, which is sort of saying that, you know, for companies now, that, you know, the focus is not only just on profit, but on people and planet. And I guess, you know, where you're really dealing with is this people end, and actually getting the most out of your human capital, which is part of a company. So, you know, anyone running a big company out there, you know, it is really important, the wellness of your employees and actually the happiness of them.
And that comes, I've actually just written some for a level 3 training on happiness, and we're talking about whether it's or wellness, whether it's we should be focusing on the individual or collectively. And there is a lot written now, even in countries. So we know that, you know, Bhutan has been the only country that's measured gross national wellness. I'm sorry, gross domestic happiness. I forget.
Oh, really? In England?
They actually have a measure of it. Uh-huh. And a lot of the countries, even in England, now have got seven sort of tenets of wellness of how they judge the well-being of the country. So, that, you know, the old...
So it's really coming to this
changing from the how rich are we to how well are we and how happy are we.
Yeah.
But that's exciting. That's really
that
exciting.
That is really exciting. Because, I mean, I sort of feel as well, if we can get away from... Because money has such a bad rap. You know, like you and I have talked about this. It has such a bad rap and it upsets me because money really is a neutral thing. It's nothing. It takes on the values that we give it.
Yeah.
So if it has an ugliness attached to it, it's not because it is inherently ugly. It's the people who have it and what we're doing with it that is ugly. Yeah. So I think this whole movement of consciousness globally in lots of different spaces is fabulous. In wellness and hopefully in wealth. I'm trying to push it through in the wealth space as well. Even in leadership, you know, like in different conscious leadership and conscious capitalism, all these different things.
There's a lot of interesting stuff written on. I notice here that book, one of my favourite books here, The Happiness Project.
Has
a chapter on money, which I'm sure you're familiar
with.
But, it was saying how there's lots of different classifications as to how does money buy happiness. And she makes a really good point that money doesn't buy happiness, neither does good health. Health doesn't buy happiness.
No, it doesn't.
It's almost like you need to have both in order to be able to live a good life and have purpose and meaning in what you do.
Well, it's like this whole thing when we started the conversation, wellness, the facets, there's so many facets of wellness, like that you almost need all these different areas working in the same way to achieve
absolutely
true wellness. And wellness is your own definition.
That's really struck me, where it's the relativity of wealth. So they looked at the research, or she looked at the research and said, you know, basically, if you were fairly wealthy, or the people earned over a certain amount of money were happier than people who earned less.
Yes.
But one of the points she made was that happiness and the relationship between finances and happiness was also relativity. So in other words, if you had four cows and your neighbour had three...
Oh, yeah, you were
you'd be pretty happy.
You'd be pretty happy until the next neighbour has six.
There is in today's society. And the thing is, it's human nature.
Yeah.
It's human nature, isn't it? Say whether you're driving.
We want to be top dog. I suppose it's that whole survival of the fittest thing. We want to be top dog.
And it's almost a sad reflection on human nature in a way. But it's interesting to bear that in mind. So what we're doing is saying that really wealth represents that we're doing something better than other people.
Than other people, which makes us feel successful. Is that achievement part of the wellness sort of thing that you were talking about, having that achievement?
And I find it quite sad in a way too, because you know, there are a lot of wealthy people who don't really judge themselves on their money, and there's a lot of people out there who their money defines them.
Yeah.
And they expect the privilege of wealth. In other words, they expect to have privilege because of...
Yeah, because of what they own.
So
Fiona, as a savvy femtrepreneur doing amazing things in business, what does the future hold for Fiona Cosgrove?
Well, at the very grand age of I shouldn't disclose it, should I? I'm at the stage now where I thought I would be nicely retired.
Yes.
I tried that a few
years. You tried that, though, but you didn't like it.
It was very boring. I don't think retirement sort of features in my long-term plan. But it's certainly right now it's a nice place to be to go, or now let me revisit the things that I maybe haven't had time to do.
Yeah.
So the travel and the freedom and the exploration and the unfulfilled goals of writing. And so really analysing my life to say, am I thinking in the things that are really important to me that aren't just about building an empire or building a business?
Yeah.
And I'm really pleased to say that I feel financially, if I wasn't in a position that I'm in now, in other words, if we were still striving and struggling and trying to get things, you know, across the line, I wouldn't be able to do that, and now I can do that, and it's a great place to be, because really at the end of the day, we all know when you drop dead, it's not what your bank balance is, it's probably what legacy you'd leave, or how much fun you'd have, or what people said about you.
It's your epitaph, really, isn't it? What people say about you at your funeral, kind of thing.
And I'd rather people remember me for something other than, she knew what it was.
Yeah, she was up, she bloody loved it.
She was miserable. I think moving forward, I'll then start striving for new goals in terms of... the next challenge or the next exciting thing.
Well, that keeps people alive, though, doesn't it? You have to have things to look forward to and to strive for.
But I would choose not to have a huge financial windfall, which a lot of people go, you're joking, aren't you? I go, no, because it's actually a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
You've got to
manage the money then. You've got to figure out how you're going to make it work.
imagine. And those things we spoke about earlier is that, you know, big financial wealth brings with it its own problems.
It does. It brings
how do people
own.
See you?
Yeah.
Are they judging you because of your financial success or your wealth?
And that can affect your... starts to affect your level of self-esteem and, you know, in different ways. Sometimes it can be positive or negative, yeah.
So money, that's not a necessary evil, because I think money is a great thing in that it can... as Gretchen Rubin says, it can buy happiness in certain ways.
Yes.
She talks about little mini splurges, like together.
It tends to be a splurge on,
yeah. You spend your money on a way money can buy happiness. But not having money, enough money to live,
can definitely
certainly
make you unhappy.
Yeah,
I know. So look, if our viewers want to find out more about the great work that you do, where should they go?
www.wellnesscoachingaustralia.com.au
And they can find out all about your training. And for anyone out there who wants to, is ever thinking about becoming a wellness coach, I mean, you couldn't learn from someone better than Fiona Cosgrove, and she runs brilliant training programs for coaches. So I know it's definitely, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, wellness coaching would be something I would definitely be interested in.
Fantastic.
In doing. Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Wealth and wellness coaching. There's an idea. We could collaborate on something, I think, later. Well, listen, thanks so much for being with me here, Fiona. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you to everyone for watching again for another week. And remember that you can catch me later on this week on iTunes on my Wealth Unplugged podcast, where I'll be talking about my key takeouts from my chat with Fiona today. So it's quick, bite-sized chunks of what we talked about today. Remember also to tune in next week, where I'm going to be talking to a girl called Natasha Moy from Girl Power Goddess. And we're going to be talking about why is it that women feel so embarrassed about admitting that they want to make squillions of money. See you then.